Good morning again. And welcome again. So this morning, what I'd like to talk about is the hands and eyes of the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion. So some of you know that during fall practice period, which we're in now, that where some of us are studying and practicing the Brahmaviharas or divine abodes, which are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So today I'd like to talk about compassion by sharing this famous koan that is called the hands and eyes of the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion. So this is found in the Book of Serenity, it's case 54. It's also found in the Blue Cliff Record, it's case 89 there. So here's the koan. Yunyan asked Dao Wu, "What does the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion do with so many hands and eyes?" Dao Wu said, "It's like someone reaching back for the pillow in the middle of the night." Yunyan said, "I understand." Dao Wu said, "How do you understand?" Yunyan said, "All over the body is hands and eyes." Dao Wu said, "You said a lot there, but you only got 80%. Yunyan said, "What about you, elder brother?" Dao Wu said, "Throughout the body is hands and eyes." So to fully receive this koan, I think some of us anyway probably need a little more background. So I'll give you some background about this. So what they're talking about, the initial question, the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion. So that's Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara is also called the one who hears the cries of the world. So a Bodhisattva is a being who is devoted to saving all beings from suffering. And we study bodhisattvas as a way of looking at different ways that that vow manifests. So like we have Jizo Bodhisattva, and that the vow of saving all beings manifests in terms of being willing to go into hell and being willing to, and especially looking out for children and mothers, things like that. So Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva is also helping, but in a more broad way, a very vast way of just compassion for all beings. And there's a legend that, so again, these Bodhisattvas, you can say, are kind of mythical beings, but also they're real people do embody and express these qualities. So that happens as well. But, you know, I'm talking now about this mythical being with the many hands and eyes. So we'll tell the story of how that happened. So the legend is, first of all, when Avalokiteshvara first really heard all the suffering of the world, just trying to take it in, that then her head burst open from the pain. Like thinking about all of the suffering beings in the world was just too much. Like, you know, so if you've ever sort of felt like too much coming in and said that my head is going to explode, so it's like that, like just taking it all in, and then it's like, oh, the head exploded. So that's the legend. And then her teacher, Amitabha Buddha, took the various pieces of her head and put them back together, but made, it says, 11 heads in its place. So 11 heads. You could think 11 heads is lots of wisdom, lots of seeing, 22 ears. There's just this sense of like, there's more expansion, there's more possibility. And then the legend also is that Avalokiteshvara tried to gather all the suffering beings into her two arms. And in trying to do that, the two arms just broke into millions of pieces. So kind of similar to the head exploding, that the arms just couldn't handle it. And so then it says Amitabha Buddha gave her 1,000 arms. and a thousand arms and a thousand hands on each arm. And then in each, the palm of each hand was an eye. So the arms and hands to hold beings and the eyes to really see the suffering and the wisdom to know what to do. So I think in this time of COVID, this image of gathering all beings in the arms is especially poignant because we can't hug and hold each other. I mean, with the people in our bubble, our families, yes. So then that can happen in the sort of close people that we're living with. But if we're really protecting others, protecting all beings from the spread of this illness, then we can't hug and hold each other in general, just people that are friends and, you know, further out relatives, we can't shake hands. So we long to hold beings in our arms, but then our eyes of wisdom know that in order to really help beings that we can't do that. So one thing I'd like to do right now is just invite you to do a virtual hug. And this is something, Victoria Austin, who's in a peer group that I'm in now, so she's a teacher out of San Francisco Zen Center. She taught me this. So what you do is you do like this, like you're going to gather everyone in your arms, and then you just bring it around to yourself. So like with the idea that you've gathered it, everyone in, and then you feel that, so you can feel that, and then do it the opposite way. So that the arms go the sort of awkward way and feel that. So then that's like a way we're virtually hugging each other. So I thought that was very nice. Thank you. Thank you for being willing to try out that. So back to this Bodhisattva of great compassion with the thousand hands and eyes. It says, what does the Bodhisattva of great compassion do with so many hands and eyes? And then the answer is, it's like someone reaching back for the pillow in the middle of the night. So this is kind of interesting to look at. She has all of these eyes, and yet here she is in the middle of the night. So the eyes can't see in the dark. We're looking at that metaphor. And what the night is representing here is non-duality. So in the night, there's no distinctions. And actually, Avalokiteshvara is strongly associated with non-duality in this way. So I've been saying she, but I'll just say that up until about the 12th century, Avalokiteshvara was portrayed as male. And then after that time, we don't really know why, she took the form of the Mother Goddess of Mercy. And sometimes she's shown with the features of both genders. And actually, there's a lot of bodhisattvas that are more androgynous. But anyway, so some say that the fact that Avalokiteshvara is shown with features of both genders is symbolic of the bodhisattva's transcendence of dualities, such as the male-female gender distinctions. But I like to think of Avalokiteshvara as gender non-binary, so not identifying with one gender or the other. And this really fits overall with what bodhisattvas are, because bodhisattvas, it says in the Lotus Sutra, that they can manifest in whatever form is best suited for the situation. So they're just very fluid. So that is, I think, a wonderful thing to know about Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, Bodhisattva of great compassion. But the other thing is that even though she's non-dual, she manifests as this being in a particular form, and now it's this fantastical form with a thousand hands and eyes and 11 heads. So the hands and eyes are manifesting there to do the activity of compassion. And yet, this activity happens in this completely ordinary way, this reaching back for the pillow in the night. And as the koan goes on, Dao Wu in the story, and by the way, in the story, Yun Yan and Dao Wu are, I think they were actually brothers. And they were also, so they were blood brothers, but they were also spiritual Dharma brothers. So they practiced together. Yun Yan was the one who started out with the question, what does the Bodhisattva of great compassion do with so many hands and eyes? And then Dao Wu says, it's like reaching back for the pillow. And then there's this back and forth of, oh, I understand. And then Dao Wu says, well, how do you understand? Yun Yan says, all over the body is hands and eyes. So that's really beautiful. Like just it's present all over. But then Dao Wu says, that's not quite it. He didn't get it quite right. It's pretty close. It's 80%. And so then Yun Yan says, well, how do you understand it, elder brother? And then Dao Wu says, throughout the body is hands and eyes. So it's not just that there are hands and eyes all over the body, you know, like the symbolic, you know, thousands of arms and hands and eyes. It's the whole body is the activity of compassion. Throughout the body is the activity of compassion. So John Dido Laurie, who's a he's now deceased, but contemporary Zen teacher, a founder of the Zen Mountain Monastery, where Taizan Alford is right now. And he wrote about this koan. He says this, because of the activity of the Bodhisattva of great compassion is her whole body and mind itself. It is not limited to any notions or ideas of self or other. I'll say that again. Because the activity of the Bodhisattva is her whole body and mind itself, it is not limited. In other words, the activity of great compassion is not limited to any notions or ideas of self or other. Asking the question, so in the koan, what does she do with so many hands and eyes? Asking the question is 1,000 miles from the truth. Don't you see? Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva has never understood compassion. So what he's saying there is that there's no understanding of compassion in the usual way that we think about it. So this reaching back for the pillow is automatic. So one thing to know, and this is, you know, I read this scientifically, it says that we'll, if in the night, if we're cold, we will pull up the covers and without waking up. So we're still completely in dream state. And if we're cold, we just automatically pull up the covers. So this reaching back for the pillow is like that. It's like just so natural, like it's what you would do. And that's the kind of activity Dao was referring to, how we do compassion, how the activity of compassion functions. At its most deep level. So that doesn't mean that we shut off our minds to think about what activity we will do. It doesn't mean that like it's not true compassion if we're thinking about it. But if we're only thinking about it and we're not don't have the deep connection, then we lose the opportunity to have this vast way in which compassion is expressed. So some questions that I have for us to consider is, can we act from a place of non-duality even as we enter the world of this and that to do good? So even as we think of particular activities and engage in particular activities, can we act from this very spacious place of beyond, really beyond this and that, beyond right and wrong, beyond my idea and your idea. And then we come back into an idea and then act. Can we do that? Can we allow compassion to manifest throughout our whole body without needing to understand how it manifests? So I think this is an invitation we can give ourselves as we step forward on the path of compassion. I also think it's very useful to look at how in the story and remembering that reaching back for the pillow is compassion toward ourselves. So like it starts with ourselves. You know, what does the Bodhisattva of compassion do with so many hands and eyes? It's like reaching back in the night for a pillow. Making ourselves comfortable. Nurturing ourselves, caring for ourselves. And really to develop our compassion muscle, having compassion for others, we really need to start with ourselves. So I remember one time learning that one of my early teachers had done something harmful, and it was very upsetting to me and others and hurtful. And I remember in particular, there was one time when a little bit more information became uncovered. And I think like I let out this groan or a gasp, and you know, people were like, oh my gosh, how could that, you know, that's terrible or something like that. Like really, you know, like that. And then I remember another priest admonished me, have some compassion. And I remember in that moment, just sort of having this fierceness arise and say, I am having compassion for myself. And I think that was really what was going on. I actually needed to feel my feelings of hurt, surprise, disgust. I had to have compassion for myself and my feelings before I could move toward compassion for someone else, and especially before I could move toward compassion to the person who had hurt me. So I think this is really a good teaching for us right now, this remembering that first we have to apply self-compassion. Because I think many of us have felt very wounded by the national political climate over the past 4 years. And perhaps someone has suggested to you, you should have some compassion, or maybe you have had the idea that if you were a good person, you would have some compassion. And also we sometimes hear, oh, we need to heal, which is true. But it's sort of like if you put a Band-Aid over the wound before cleaning it out, it's a problem because the wound will fester and it will get worse. The infection will go inside. So this cleaning out the wound is also like feeling the hurt. So that's compassion toward ourselves, where we can receive. This is really how I feel. So I actually think it's a good idea to have this impulse like, oh, I'd like to generate some compassion for someone who has harmed me or others. So it's not like that in itself is bad. That's a good impulse, but don't skip over the important work of really being connected to your own body and your own pain, your own feelings. So starting with yourself, compassion is asking, what are you feeling? And asking, can I allow myself to feel my own pain? Can I allow myself to reach back for that pillow? Like that's a natural activity. So can I just allow it to happen? And if you can't allow it to happen, so sometimes people have a hard time applying compassion to themselves. But if you don't, then I would say your compassion for others will probably not be very deep. You might even say it won't be true compassion, because true compassion includes everyone, including you. So another way to think about that is from John Tarrant, and this is in the book Bring Me the Rhinoceros, where he talks about this koan. So one thing he says is, if you're busy thinking that you should be kind, you might miss the reality that kindness is already present in you. So I'll read that one more time. If you are busy thinking that you should be kind, you might miss the reality that kindness is already present in you. So thinking that we should be kind is like stepping away from the reaching back for the pillow in the night. Thinking that we should be kind is like Avalokiteshvara before she had the 11 heads. Thinking about that could just cause her head to explode. It's not actually going to be helpful. So instead, how can we just open to what is happening right now? Feeling our own pain, feeling the pain of others even, and then seeing what's there and seeing, is there kindness already there? And, you know, that kindness may be present, but then the question is, how do we actually do that? How do we let go of this busy thinking, or let go of our unworthiness or our shame or the inner critic? So I would like to offer a bit of a guided meditation, and this from Tara Brach's Radical Compassion book, which I think many of you know I really love. So I'd like to do that for the next about 10 minutes or maybe more. And since we're going into meditation, I also like to say, take care of your body. So you might stand up and do a stretch if you like, or kind of twist, move your body. A lot of us spend a lot of time sitting in front of a computer these days. So just re-engaging with our bodies and moving our bodies is a good idea. And then settling into a upright and comfortable meditation pose. And this meditation is called Letting In Love. Could also call it Letting In Kindness. Or we could call it Developing the Muscle of Compassion by practicing self-compassion. So I just invite you to sit here. You can close your eyes if you want, or leave them open. You might just be in touch with your breathing. Be aware of your whole body. And then bring to mind a situation where you experienced a lot of self-judgment or self-aversion. So a situation where you were unable to hold yourself with compassion. So visualize what's going on in that situation. And because we're really trying to touch the difficulty, you might consider, what is the worst part of this situation? What really makes you feel that something is wrong with me? Or just being in that, being aware of that idea, something is wrong with me, without really knowing why, if that idea is there. So allow yourself to really contact the vulnerable place in your body that feels you are bad, unlovable, or unworthy. So for many of us, it's hard to identify where that vulnerability is in our body. But just really paying attention, seeing if we can identify this felt sense of shame. Is it in our throat or our heart or our belly? Or maybe our neck and shoulders, our lower back. Like, where is it that when we think about this situation where we are having a hard time having compassion for ourselves, where in our body does that hurt land? And it could be more than one place. Or maybe it feels kind of amorphous in the whole body. Or maybe there's kind of a numbness and a frozenness in the body. We can't seem to feel anything. And whatever we're experiencing from this inner place, imagine the kind of nurture that would feel most comforting and most healing. What would be most helpful to us? Would it be hearing words that affirm your goodness and worth? Would it be receiving a hug? Or just someone there with a tender and accepting presence. And maybe you already have a sense of who you would most wish to be the source of that nurture. So, who you would imagine saying those words or giving that hug or just being present for you. So whose love would feel the most healing to you? Whose care would you most trust? So you might imagine a dear friend or a child or a pet, even a tree or the sky. It could be a grandparent or even someone who's no longer alive. Or you might want to bring to mind a teacher or spiritual figure, such as the Buddha, Avalokiteshvara. Or you might imagine a formless presence of your own higher self, your future or realized being. So, whatever way in which you imagine you'd like to receive this nurturing, just imagine that presence there. And then really feel how much you long to be truly seen and loved and held. And then silently call on the source of loving that you've chosen. So you might say, please love me, or please hold me, or please take care of me, or whatever words would most fully express your longing. And then imagine being heard. Imagine that your vulnerability and longing are really felt by that presence. If the being has eyes, you might imagine them looking at you, receiving you with total love, understanding, and care. Sense their love as an energetic presence that surrounds you and soaks into you like an absorbent sponge. Just be like that sponge, soaking it in, letting it in. You might feel the love filling your body like a warm glow. Or visualize it as a flow of golden nectar penetrating into the hollows and crevices and soothing and healing the most wounded places inside you. Allow yourself to bathe in this loving. To surrender and let go into the loving more and more fully. To dissolve into oneness with that loving presence. You might invite yourself to become the tender field that your small self is floating in. The loving awareness that is holding your life. So before we end the meditation, just take some moments to listen and to continue to be present to yourself in this way, receiving compassion. And maybe wondering, is there some message from this heart space or something to remember that feels important that you want to carry forward? So we have about 15 minutes left. And what I'd like to do next is, you have two choices. So we can either, I'm gonna invite people to join breakout groups, small groups. If you want to just talk about, let's see if I have a prompt here. Just maybe, share what your experience is with self-compassion. Is it hard for you or is it easy? Or you could just share what's happening in your life as a way of having compassion for yourself. And if you don't want to, now I see people are already leaving, so just hang on. There's another choice. So if people have already left, missed this. The other choice is you can just stay in the room with me and have a Q&A. So those are your two choices. And I'm sorry, I should have said the first choice first. anyway, so that's what we'll do. And so it's just up to you which you want to do. And I'm gonna do, let's see, I'll do 4 to 5 participants per room. So it means you won't have a lot of time. So just each person will have like just a minute or two just to say, is self-compassion hard or easy for you? And then we'll come back. We need to come back by 10:21. So, and we'll just have a few minutes to check back in. So here we go. So let's see, maybe if anyone who was in the breakout sessions wants to just write something in the chat, you know, for feedback on how that was. Like, I know that for a while there was one person who was just in a group by herself, and I don't know if she came back. I did, that was Kathleen. I did switch her to a different group anyway. So as we're learning the technology. I'm appreciative of any patience you can give me. Oh yeah, it's so I'm glad that partners were in a group together, even though that's really funny. It's random, but sometimes like partners and you know, parents and children end up in the same breakout room. It's just hilarious. Great. So thank you everyone for your participation. I appreciate your practice. And with that, I think I'll just turn it back over to Yokai for the closing chant.